Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzstrauber. On today's show, what will Trump mean for the FCC? While the Trump campaign was short on details for tech policy, one area where people are pretty clear on is the FCC. There will be a lot of changes coming, in particular on net neutrality. Quick recap of what has happened on net neutrality. We've talked about this on the show before, but back in November of 2014, President Obama spoke out asking the FCC to reclassify internet providers under Title II of the 1934 Communications Act. This is essentially utility-style rules on broadband, turning them into common carriers and putting them under the purview of the FCC. They voted on that rule in February of 2015, and then it took effect in June of that year. And since then, those are the rules that have been on the books. But most people expect that those things are going to be changing under Trump's FCC. So joining me to discuss this is the front runner for FCC Chairman Barron Soka, who's also currently president of Tech Freedom. We'll see how much longer that lasts. And Tom Struble, policy counsel at Tech Freedom. Who knows if he would end up being in the FCC? I mean, it's too early to tell. There's a lot of speculation. But gentlemen, thanks for joining the show.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And of course, in all seriousness, there is a lot of speculation out there about who will be the FCC chairman. That's not what we're talking about on the show today. We're talking about policy. So, Barron, I'll start with you. What's going to happen to net neutrality?
Well, a lot of what we're going to talk about today does depend on who becomes chair. So we'll see. But some of it is really easy to predict. At a minimum, I think we should expect the FCC to undo the two claims of legal authority that have undergirded net neutrality. And that starts with Title II. So that's a fairly easy thing to do. The FCC, contrary to what some people are saying, doesn't even need to do a rulemaking. They can just come out with an order saying the previous interpretation was wrong. Broadband is not a Title II telecommunications service. And there are all sorts of reasons why they can do that. The irony here is that when the FCC does that, they're going to rely on the same deference that the Obama FCC claimed in reinterpreting Title II in the first place. In other words, the courts right now have taken a very hands-off approach to changes of agency interpretation, and they're likely to uphold whatever the Trump FCC does in undoing what the Obama FCC did. So that's the first thing I think you should count on. The second thing, very, very likely, perhaps slightly less likely, is that the agency will also undo the 2010 reinterpretation of a previously obscure provision of the 1996 Telecom Act, Section 706. The FCC had claimed that that is a blank check to regulate any form of communications in any way that promotes broadband. So you should expect both of those interpretations to be canceled. And what that effectively does is to say the FCC is not going to regulate net neutrality, and they're going to hand the issue back to the Federal Trade Commission, where, in my opinion, it always belonged. And that agency is going to have to figure out how to deal with it.
So to recap, we're talking about mostly what the FCC's authority is and less about what the policy might be in the future, because the two things that will be going away are, one, the FCC's authority to regulate broadband providers, because as we know, common carriers are not regulated by the FCC, and not the Federal Trade Commission. So once that goes away, the issue will be kicked back to the Federal Trade Commission. And then this other issue of this independent authority to regulate basically anything involving the internet, you think that will be undone,
right,
as well?
So that much you can pretty much count on. There's a little bit of a question on the margin. Maybe the FCC might wait a little bit because they don't want to moot the court case that's currently pending. They want to wait and see if the DC Circuit actually reverses the panel decision which upheld the FCC's rules. That's possible. It's also possible the FCC might keep that 706 authority because there could be hawks running the FCC who maybe want the agency to regulate cybersecurity, which is one of the things the agency has hinted it could do with 706. But basically, net neutrality and broadband regulation more generally, including things like privacy, is going to be returned to the Federal Trade Commission. And now then the question is, what does the policy regime actually look like? Many people in the media are saying, well, that's going to be the end of net neutrality. I don't think that's really true. Things like no blocking, transparency, and essentially 90% of the policy issues are going to be handled exactly the same way. They'll be enforced by the Federal Trade Commission. But for example, broadband providers have always said that they would live by essentially what were in the 2010 rules. And maybe something beyond that, like maybe extending some parts of those to wireless services. So I think you should expect that industry will simply commit to doing what it's always said it would do, and that industry commitment would be enforced by the Federal Trade Commission directly, so that if a company didn't do that, that would be a deceptive trade practice. So that would be on top of the FTC's enforcement through its normal deception power. If you lie to your consumers, then the FTC goes after you. If you commit an unfair practice, something that harms consumers without giving them a corresponding benefit, that's an unfair practice. And then, of course, there are the antitrust laws. So there are many layers. This is what we've always said is a better way to deal with net neutrality. And I just would note that we could have actually had the Federal Trade Commission dealing with these issues starting back in 2007 when this whole fight started about Comcast BitTorrent. The Federal Trade Commission was ready to bring that case and would have done so. Its senior Democrat and Republican agreed on bringing that case, except that Kevin Martin, who was the chair of the FCC at the time, insisted the FCC was going to be the decider. And that's how we've spent the last 9 years fighting about the FCC's authority.
So you mentioned some of the less controversial aspects of net neutrality that might be handled just fine by the Federal Trade Commission. But there are obviously these other issues that were really hot in the debate. And while maybe a group like Tech Freedom was very focused on the FCC's authority and the regulatory process, which is very important, there are a lot of groups on the left that got into this debate because of paid prioritization. This idea that some content on the internet could be prioritized over other content by virtue of a edge provider like Netflix paying Comcast, you know, what they would call a ransom fee. We might just call it an interconnection fee, or it's just a priority fee. But there was this danger that unless you pay up, unless, you know, companies like Tumblr and Etsy and a lot of these pro net neutrality companies pay internet providers, their traffic will be slowed down and it will create inequality in the internet ecosystem. I mean, that was a major issue, right, Tom?
It was. Yeah, that was probably the biggest boogeyman put forward during the neutrality rulemaking process to justify the strong rules that the FCC eventually put forward. But yeah, to your question, we are mostly talking about what authorities and tools we brought to bear on these issues, and not actually the policy of net neutrality. Because as Baron just said, most all ISPs have internalized the concept of net neutrality into their business practices. They don't want to unreasonably discriminate against certain services that their users want to access online. But the question is, you know, it's on the margins. What's unreasonable? You know, so there was a big debate in the net neutrality rulemaking about the unreasonableness or commercial reasonableness. If you add commercial in there, does that have any difference?
Yeah, if money's changing hands, unless if things are being prioritized for money, or if they're just being prioritized for network congestion and more non-commercial reasons, right?
Right, exactly. Those are the sorts of battles that I think we'll see change probably going forward.
But for consumers, Tom, because you've written about this and we've talked about this on the show before about how certain services could benefit from paid prioritization, which under the Obama rules, there's a bright line ban on that. And you could imagine that if the FCC changes course now with a Trump FCC, paid prioritization will not be banned outright. Depending on what happens with legislation, we'll see how it's dealt with. But could consumers start seeing new business models where their video game company can pay an internet provider to make online video games work better? What does this mean for live sports? I mean, are these industries now given new life? I mean, what do you think is going to happen based on the FCC changing course?
Well, it's speculative at this point. You can imagine these sorts of services we're talking about being rolled out. I haven't seen them yet, but I would certainly say they have more breathing room to innovate in this area going forward now, because under the previous rules, there was a bright line ban with limited exceptions. If you went to the FCC ahead of time, asked for permission, then you were allowed to roll out these services. But now those, you know, it'll be permissionless innovation. Once again, if you want to roll out some new service that requires prioritization, you could do so, and we may get these new services, and the market will decide whether or not they're valuable or not.
So, Baron, last thing on net neutrality, the big thing next is legislation, right? Because we've long said that Democrats were taking a big risk at the FCC by just banking on a Hillary Clinton presidency and assuming that 4 to 8 years of Hillary Clinton would just keep cementing the Obama rules and making them more and more difficult to overturn. But under the FCC's own logic, all it takes is 3 votes and a reinterpretation of the law and everything is gone. But that leaves a vacuum, because if you're, you know, Tech Freedom has said swinging the pendulum back and forth between a Republican FCC and Democrat FCC and just changing policy back and forth administration to administration is not helpful. So what do you think is going to happen with this idea that legislation can be passed? We've seen an olive branch from Republicans Greg Walden and Upton in the Commerce Committee. They said they're still willing to do a deal even though the politics have changed and the balance of power has changed. How do you see this playing out?
Well, the reason they're still willing to do a deal is that fundamentally they want codification of the FCC's legal authority. Because as I said at the outset in our discussion of legal authority, The FCC here could reverse the Democrat FCC's legal claims, but a Democratic FCC could come along in the future and reinstate that. So that's the thing that's going to ping pong back and forth until there is legislation. So that in turn gives congressional Republicans a very strong incentive to do a deal. Then the question becomes, as a policy matter, what does the regime look like? And there's basically a spectrum where you're going to have the new status quo, which is the FTC just handling this issue on its own authority and enforcing whatever code of conduct industry has. That's if you will, the right end of the spectrum. And the left end of the spectrum is going to be essentially the deal that Republicans offered almost 2 years ago, which was essentially to codify something like the 2010 rules. And in between, you basically have two options. You could keep the issue at the Federal Trade Commission, but give them rulemaking power under the normal way that agencies make rules, which is something the FTC can't generally do. And that would allow them to codify the things that people are concerned about. I think that's probably the best reasonable compromise. It addresses concerns that we have about the FCC being involved in this at all, which I think is a bad idea.
And this is essentially the FTC enforcing things that companies have almost voluntarily said they would do anyway. So it's really the companies saying we'll behave a certain way, and then the FTC can then enforce that.
Yeah, right? The simple way to think about it is it simply moves the way that these issues are handled from industry commitments to a binding FTC rule. The FTC would be the enforcer either way. It's just the FTC would get to write the rule. So that is, if you will, the second most rightward option. And then the second most leftward option, which is probably where we'll wind up, just realistically speaking, is you keep the issue at the FCC, but you import a more FTC-like standard of unfair competition for dealing with the hard edge cases.
So rather than bright line bans on things, you judge the consumer harms as they come,
exactly,
and deal with them in a case by case basis.
And that would be for things like zero rating, interconnection, prioritization. And I just want to emphasize on the prioritization example, you mentioned live sports. There, no single statement in this entire debate has gotten more attention or has been more twisted than a single line from the oral arguments about the 2010 rules, where Verizon's counsel was trying to establish that Verizon actually had standing to sue, that they were going to be harmed by the rules. And the judge said, okay, well, how are you harmed? And she said, almost exactly quoting, she said, but for these rules, we would be pursuing those arrangements. And the left has interpreted those arrangements to mean that Verizon was going to hold hostage edge companies, like you said earlier, and charge them money. But if you actually,
the worst case scenario where you have to pay money to get good service.
Right. But if you actually go back and read the transcript, what she was actually talking about was a situation in which Verizon would pay ESPN, not the other way around. And that's just to illustrate.
Content is king.
Content is king. And everybody assumes in this debate that the gatekeepers are the broadband providers and that that's what net neutrality is all about. But in fact, there's a wide range of things that could happen here for consumers, and a lot of them really are about content owners not feeling comfortable just throwing their content up online. So in a more flexible FTC-like approach, even if it's enforced by the FCC, you could see experimentation with that.
All right, so let's do a lightning round to kick off some of the other issues that have been really cornerstones of the Obama-era FCC, and see how they might change under a Trump FCC. FCC privacy regulation. This was an outgrowth of the net neutrality order because once the FCC took jurisdiction away from the FTC, and listeners bear with us as we switch back and forth between acronyms that are very similar, then the FCC had to regulate the privacy practices of broadband providers. They were on a course that was going to put a more stringent regime on infrastructure companies like Verizon and over companies like Google and Facebook. Tom, I mean, with the change in the FCC, are these rules dead in the water?
Yes, I think they surely are. So we'll go back to the FTC regulating all privacy online. We have the same standard applying to the entire internet ecosystem, which we think is a superior way to regulate privacy. So
because essentially, whether you're an infrastructure company or an edge company, you should be protecting consumers. You should be protecting their privacy. There shouldn't be a different standard. Barron, what about set-top boxes? I mean, that was another big item where, I mean, a lot of senators made a lot of hay over the fees that consumers pay every year for set-top boxes. The FCC had an unlock the box order. It was a big push. A big campaign. It was very public, trying to be very consumer friendly. I mean, Is this bad for consumers? Are consumers now going to have to go back to paying big fees for set-top boxes?
Well, as we've always said, and we can link to this in the show notes, this issue's never really been about set-top boxes. Those are already disappearing for market reasons. This issue's always been about how apps work. And the short answer here is that you're going to see the same compromise that has been on the table for over a year and a half, which is that, yes, consumers should be able to choose and get their content on the devices of their choice, but there's no reason that a Comcast should be forced to provide its content to some third-party app maker. As long as consumers can get a Comcast app and run that on the device of their choice, that's what Congress had in mind with that provision. That will enable competition, and that's what I think the FCC is going to come out with. That's not been controversial, except for the fact that this particular chairman just had he was fixated on boxes, and he could not let go of this bullshit number that he kept throwing around about consumers getting ripped off.
Yeah, sorry, if I could get on my soapbox here a little bit. I am the host of the show, but this issue really pissed me off because we are in the golden age of television. I mean, if you're listening to this show, it's easy to see this. You've never had more ways to watch, more devices, more services, better content. I mean, how could anyone look at this ecosystem and say it's broken and it needs a massive government intervention? And if the worst thing that the FCC could come up with is the horrible situation where, God forbid, you have to use one remote for your cable and a separate remote for your Netflix, or even more ridiculous, you might have to switch between your Netflix app and your Comcast app to access content. I mean, come on. I mean, talk about first world problems. It's just ridiculous. So I wouldn't be surprised if that issue just dies as well. Now, of course, there are other issues. There's business data services. Tom, this was an issue where the FCC was claiming that the market for these broadband services that businesses get was not competitive enough. So you've got big carriers like Verizon and other phone companies that resell their services to smaller companies, right? It's essentially wholesaling. They were claiming they were getting ripped off. They needed the FCC to step in. What do you think is going to happen with this issue?
Well, yeah. So with BDS, formerly Special Access Services, you had Verizon and Encompass who came together and agreed on this new framework. They were going to essentially re-regulate parts of the special access market, which was entirely deregulated about a decade ago. I think the early 2000s, they deregulated because they wanted entry into the space.
And when you say regulate, we're talking about price regulation, right?
Exactly. Price regulation via tariffs. So you had in the early 2000s, it was almost all telephone companies providing these business data services. But then the FCC decided to deregulate the field because they wanted to incentivize cable to enter it. And that's exactly what happened. Now cable providers are the single biggest providers of business data services. So it was kind of surprising to me, as someone who watches the telecom sector, the FCC was, after seeing all this entry into this space, was now going to re-regulate it based on all of this data they'd been collecting, saying the prices were uncompetitive. I didn't delve into the data myself, but I was very skeptical of it, and I am upset that it is now going.
Fred Campbell had written an op-ed saying something like, when 88 feet is a market failure, and really he was pointing his finger at the notion that just because someone who buys the wholesale signal from Verizon, that they might have to build 88 feet worth of infrastructure to connect to something, that's not anti-competitive. That just requires you to invest a little bit in infrastructure as opposed to just complaining about it and wanting to buy it wholesale and not have to pay for any infrastructure.
It's also worth noting what we're talking about here is really deploying in downtown areas primarily. So it's dense areas and office buildings. And part of what's so screwy about this is that the FCC has been assuming that you have to actually do that digging trenches, connecting another building. But of course, we've talked about this a lot. 5G services are right around the corner, and they actually are perfect for deploying very, very high-speed broadband in those dense areas without having to wire buildings. So in other words, we're going to see the competitive landscape change completely, and it's going to become a lot easier to deploy even gigabit service wirelessly.
Yeah, so let's talk about consumer broadband, because we just talked about a very wonky issue that really only applies to businesses, and most consumers probably have never heard of this business data debate. But of course, the FCC is important for retail broadband deployment, for consumers to get broadband. And despite over $1 trillion of private investment over 20 years, really a remarkable achievement, America has pretty good internet despite all the stories you hear about how crappy it is. I mean, it's a big challenge. We're a big country with a lot of different landscapes, a lot of different regulatory regimes, but there is a digital divide. There are people who do not have access to fast, affordable internet. This is a problem. We can agree that this is an issue. The question is, how do we solve it? And under the Wheeler FCC, you saw a big push for governments to build and run their own networks in cities. You saw a big push to expand taxes to have more funding for universal service programs like Lifeline. So, I mean, if you're a social justice warrior out there, you're worried about low-income people getting less affordable internet under Trump because the universal services go away. How do you guys see this shaking out?
Well, it may depend in part on who becomes chairman. Ajit Pai has laid out a very bold agenda that has gotten most attention for his idea of gigabit empowerment zones, where you would incentivize cities that made broadband deployment easy by giving them federal tax breaks. But actually, to me, what's really important about his agenda is he recognizes that the FCC has abdicated its responsibility over the last 8 years and perhaps even longer to lead the way in coordinating. Rather than trying to dictate to everybody what they should do about broadband, they could play a very valuable role in coordination about how to make broadband deployment easier, coming up with best practices, essentially doing competition advocacy, saying to cities and states, here's how to make broadband deployment easier. That's at the heart of his agenda. It's something we've called for before, having the FCC revive its joint board about broadband deployment. Because the issues we're dealing with now get to be very specific about how internal wiring in buildings is dealt with. How are cities thinking about their next generation of street lamps? Are those going to be 5G capable? Is there fiber under the sidewalks? And I think in large part, you're going to see the FCC, especially if it's run by Ajit, step up and pick up that agenda. And even if it's not, Republicans have put forward legislation in Congress to deal with a lot of these infrastructure issues. They've found common ground with Democrats on things like dig once conduits under federally funded roads. That's critical for broadband deployment, especially in rural areas, areas that are economically disaffected, areas that probably voted for Donald Trump. So I think you're going to see a new focus on infrastructure and deployment. And certainly if the president ends up getting some sort of infrastructure package through, in part, it's going to focus on this kind of stuff, which is about spending money more smartly.
And what about the government subsidies and kind of the using taxpayer money to help bridge the digital divide? Tom, there's been a ton of criticism of universal service programs for having waste, fraud, and abuse. Given the shaky track record, are these programs going to be abolished or punished, or do you think they'll be restructured in a way that some of the Republican critics might find more efficient?
Well, they are. They have long been rife with waste, fraud, and abuse that has been complained about going back for several years, and much of it has been rooted out, but much of it remains, as Ajit Pai has demonstrated this year with his individual research. But 254, the universal service provisions, are still, they're legislation. The FCC does not have it in their discretion to not pursue the goals of universal service. Congress agreed that everyone, regardless of where you live, if you're low income, if you live in a rural area, you still get access to basic communication services at reasonably comparable prices to what people in urban areas get.
Yeah, and that was written by Congress, directed to the FCC. So even if Trump changes the FCC chairman, which is obviously going to happen, and there will be new blood at the FCC, that doesn't mean that the law just disappears. So if Congress said universal service is important, bridging the digital divide is important, there's a role for government to play, the new FCC still has to uphold that. It's just a question of how they go about it.
Yes, and in terms of how they would go about it, they would try to reform the process to try and make it run more efficiently. But I think you would also identify, I guess, so in terms of the digital divides that exist out there, there's a wealth gap, low income versus medium or high income people. There's a digital divide there. There's also an urban-rural digital divide, which Ajit Pai, in his last the Broadband Progress Report statement, he basically lambasted the agency for focusing too much on urban poor to the exclusion of all the rural, you know, also poor middle class people.
Yeah, this is really worth emphasizing. This was the first time a Republican had said, yes, we should make a negative finding about the state of broadband deployment for this reason, for pointing out that the FCC's own policies have not served rural America well.
And that kind of fits in with the whole narrative of this election in many ways. So that's going to be, I mean, one of the first things that came to my mind after Trump's election, because there's not too much to go on with tech, but I was thinking this issue where the FCC had been perceived as only serving urban constituencies. You could say it's for political reasons, who votes for Democrats versus who votes for Republicans. There might be a renewed focus on those rural portions of the country, which might overlap with some of the disaffected working class people who do not have access to great broadband. So there are a couple other issues I want to just quickly tick off before we get to the big picture of how the agency works, how changes there will play out. But media regulation, media ownership. Wheeler's FCC has come under criticism because of outdated rules about who can own a newspaper. There's still these ancient rules that, you know, a television station can't own a radio station or a radio station can't own a newspaper. And it seems kind of ridiculous in the age of the internet to be putting rules in place like this that make it harder for newspapers to succeed. We've talked to Matt Berry on the show before, Ajit Pai's chief of staff. He said it's largely too late to try to help some of these newspapers, but it would still help to fix these rules. So, Barron, do you see the media ownership rules being modernized?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you ideally will see Congress pass legislation actually authorizing that. This has been a really difficult issue in the past. There was an effort to reform these rules under the first FCC under President Bush, and that really imploded. So I hope this would be fixed, but this area is going to be very sensitive, right? Because there's a lot of hesitation about what the administration may do around the media, given the president's statements about the media and
right.
his enmity
president-elect.
Towards them.
Yeah.
President, well, so so we'll see. And it's hard to say exactly how this plays out, except that it's going to be fraught with anxiety.
Yeah, and there's always been the opposition from the left that consolidation is bad because it leads to more corporatism in media and things like that. But as we've argued, I mean, you're dealing with a world with a lot of competition, and it's not just a radio station, a television station, and a newspaper in every market. That's a very outdated view of what a market is. You've got your local newspaper competing with national media and niche blogs and podcasts, and there's stuff all over the place. So it's a big market, and it's hard to just look at it in these three narrow silos.
And I would just hope that people realize that the less the government has control over the media, the better.
Right.
That would be a very good change for our friends on the left to get to.
Yeah, and go to our last episode on the Fairness Doctrine for more on that. Now, last one, this is one where people are kind of scratching their heads because Trump during the campaign said he would block the AT&T Time Warner merger that was fit very nicely with a populist campaign, anti-big corporations controlling the government and buying politicians, et cetera, et cetera. But Republicans in general have been skeptical of merger review, of the government using mergers as a way of attaching regulations without actually regulating or passing bills, just like getting companies to agree to concessions or ransom, if you want to use a more nefarious word. So what's going to happen? I mean, you could imagine a Republican FCC chairman's not going to really want to use the FCC in the way that Tom Wheeler used the FCC to badger companies into making concessions. But on the other hand, the president-elect made public comments. So what, I mean, here's a contradiction, right? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, the FCC is supposed to be an independent agency. And I think this is going to be one of the first tests of whether the president is really actually going to not just respect that independence, but undo the damage that President Obama did by coming out and directly ordering the FCC to use Title II.
So yes, it's concerning. Trump's President-elect Trump's comments give some pause for concern, definitely coming from a conservative Republican, you know, perspective. But I don't know. President-elect Trump fancies himself quite the businessman. I hope that he is just posturing for the sake of, you know, bargaining position, taking the high ground, putting up a harsh front up front so he can get more concessions in terms of the negotiation process later, in terms of build out, you know, obligations, the sort of public interest commitments these companies tend to make to get mergers pushed through.
So whereas maybe you would think that a Republican would not seek any concessions, are you suggesting that he might try to seek some concessions using the strong bargaining position?
But this is what's so awkward about this. the Department of Justice, which is to say the part of the administration where he really could legitimately exercise some control, because ultimately those are people who report to him.
Right.
They have very limited discretion because they're enforcing the antitrust laws. And under the antitrust laws, this is a really easy merger. It's a what we call purely vertical merger. In other words, it's one part of the system that's just joining with another. There is no reduction in competition in any way directly flowing from this merger.
Yeah, so let me clarify. This is not AT&T buying Time Warner Cable. There's been a lot of confusion over this. This is Time Warner, the media company. So this is CNN, HBO, right, et cetera. This is not Time Warner Cable, which was bought separately by Charter. So when he says it's a vertical integration, it's infrastructure buying content. That's what makes it vertical.
Right. So the antitrust folks could perhaps impose conditions that make sure that you don't stop other cable providers from getting access to HBO content, just for example. At the FCC, you could not only have those conditions, and the FCC actually imposed exactly those conditions when Comcast bought NBC, but you could have really anything else. I mean, the FCC has basically unchecked authority to hold mergers hostage. And so there is great room for concern about the kind of soft power that the FCC would have over the merged company. And in the worst case scenario, it could mean interfering with their editorial discretion. It could mean firing individual people or individual reporters. I mean, these are not out of the question given how much power the FCC has. And the bulwark against that kind of abuse is the FCC is supposed to be an independent agency. And so again, it depends who you get as chairman. If you get a Trump loyalist, someone who's picked for the job just because they're close to the administration, people are going to worry that that sort of manipulation might happen. If it's a more known commodity, someone who understands the traditional Republican critique of the FCC holding mergers hostage, I think that the FCC is largely going to defer to antitrust review.
All right. So we've talked a little bit about how the FCC works. Republicans have more control over government than they've had in a long time. If you look at the state legislatures, president, House and Senate, Republicans claim to be about small government. They claim that they want to demolish certain agencies that they've found their function to have outlived its usefulness. Let's, you know, think about the Department of Education, for example, in that regard. You've got a lot of people writing articles throughout the years. Abolish the FCC. Why do we have the FCC? Should we have an FCC? I mean, there's your final question.
Well, first of all, this is not a crazy right-wing fantasy. Back in the 1970s, Alfred Kahn, who was the great deregulator in chief for President Carter, he shut down the Civil Aeronautics Board and deregulated airlines in America. He always said that his great regret was that he didn't go to the FCC instead, because he would have shut that down. And you've had other people like Larry Lessig, the godfather of the intellectual left, who was so disgusted with the FCC's abuses at the end of the Bush administration that he said we should shut down the agency. Now, Larry wanted a new agency created. Most of us in the model of Alfred Kahn have said basically that we should break up the agency, dismantle it, and return the consumer protection and competition functions to the Federal Trade Commission, and that is a better idea because the FCC is, as Larry Lessig famously put it, is essentially a junior varsity Congress that's really easily captured by special interest lobbyists. Whereas the Federal Trade Commission is a general purpose regulator. It regulates essentially all companies in America, and it has generally applicable standards about unfair competition, unfairness to consumers, and deception, right? That is the best answer to do that. But as a practical matter, let's remember that Republicans still need to get 8 votes in the Senate unless they can attach legislation to some must-pass bill. And that's not going
to
be—
And that's because it's 52 to 48, so you would need 8 Democrats, assuming it's all party line, you would need 8 Democrats to flip in order to get 60 votes to circumvent the filibuster.
Bingo. Which is a way of saying that even if Republicans manage to pick up seats in the midterm elections, which is historically unlikely but seems to be likely just given how many Democrats are up that in that round— they're still going to need some Democrats to come along and compromise, which is why I think you're going to see compromises that get us more in that direction, but that look more like what my former think tank, the Progress and Freedom Foundation, the compromise that PFF forged back in 2005, bringing together intellectual leaders from the left and the right, people like Howard Schlansky, who currently runs the regulatory office inside the White House for President Obama. People like him agreed that the best way forward was to, as a compromise, was to retain the FCC, but rework it and make it work more like the Federal Trade Commission, operate more on a case-by-case basis on those standards. I think that's the most likely outcome.
Tom, any final thoughts on FCC process reform or abolishing the FCC?
I would agree pretty much 100% with everything Barron said.
Well, that's good because we all do work for the same organization.
right. But yeah, not 100%, almost 100. I mean, I definitely think this superior outcome would be the FTC taking over this as the general purpose regulator and getting rid of the sector-specific regulator, the FCC, which I think made sense during the 20th century. We had just invented the telephone. We needed to wire the whole country. And in most places, when you got telephone service, you had no options. So you had market power and potential for abuse. So that's why we had this regulator that did a lot of good work for several decades. In the 21st century, in the age of the internet, I don't think we need this. I don't think we need the FCC.
All right. Well, we'll leave that there for today. My guests have been Barron Soka, current frontrunner for FCC chairman, and Tom Struble, policy counsel at Tech Freedom. Gentlemen, thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Let us know what you think of the show. Send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. Find this podcast in the iTunes store. Please leave us a review because we'll help others find the show. Thanks for listening.
Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.